Labrish with Haptah Selassie will be back next week following the work of the Midnight Ravers at 2 a.m. 99.5 FM WBAI New York. It is 5 o'clock and time for Back of the Book. Never be, yeah.
99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. Well, okay, okay, we went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm suspecting that it's about 5 a.m. and there's no deluge this time. And you're listening to all. What do we call Donnie Bonespur Trump's former lawyers who tried to change the Georgia 2020 election results? Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things in this program, and you can find out a little bit more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And when you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that, and you'll get to the webpage for this morning's radio program. This is our 153rd pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story of the entire local group of galaxies is on Twitter. We are holding at the huge number of 123 followers, a truly gigantic number that few people can really appreciate. And I'm seeing where one of my WBAI colleagues got, quote, kicked off Mastodon for talking about getting a warning from them, unquote. So apparently you have to figure out where you'd really fit in with the instances they have on Mastodon before you go there. Because it's been suggested that I go to Mastodon because of the mess that Leon Scum has made of Twitter. I guess I should be careful where I look. For the moment, I'm still on Twitter, though. Or am I on X? The next WBAI local station board meeting will be held this Monday, October 30th, but you can't hear it. It will be in an executive session meeting. And the meeting is, quote, to discuss and evaluate WBAI management personnel, unquote. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m., and you can listen to that thing. There are notices up on kpftx.org that tell you how to listen to the thrill-packed meeting. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security, and that will be the last meeting of the 12th WBAI local station board, unless somebody manages to say, we need to have another meeting before the next regular meeting, which I hope they don't do. And after that, there will be a December meeting when we will have the beginning of the 13th WBAI LSB. Will it be unlucky? It might be. And the Pacifica and WBAI elections and the results are in. And, well, they're supposed to take seats in December at that 13th WBAI LSB beginning. It's going to be interesting because the bad guys made some gains. And we're going to see if they're able to completely wreck WBAI. I mean, they talk a good game, but they don't really do much. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which we call the CDC, they have their website, and it's not giving us all that much information on COVID-19 in America these days, although they're now saying that total deaths in America are at 1,150,119, which means that 2,866 people have died of COVID-19 since our last program 2 weeks ago. That's a weekly death rate of 1,433, which is significantly more than the weekly total on our last program. I've been trying to get my autumn booster. I haven't been doing so well. I've had a bit of an interesting fortnight. And, well, I expect I'm going to get my autumn booster next week, and I'll succeed in getting it this time, I hope. The pandemic is clearly not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We are getting or have gotten our new shots. We don't want to get this disease. We also don't want to get influenza. Pickles got her flu shot. I'm planning to get my flu shot next week with the COVID-19 booster. And it's now been a little bit more than 2 weeks since Hamas decided to start a new war with Israel. Yes, I know some people will object to that, but some people are idiots. Of course, we spoke at length about this on the last program. And really, you know, as we said then, a major thing here is Hamas had to have planned this. I mean, they're bragging about spending a very long time planning the attack that they pulled on October 7th. And they probably had help from Iran to plan this. And they probably helped to coordinate with other groups to plan this. And then they did it. Now, they did all that planning. They were able to plan exactly when to do it, when to hit the gates, the fences, and destroy them, how to go in, which kibbutzes to invade and attack, and all of these kind of things. They had it all planned. Now, is the whole world supposed to now believe that their planning went to breaking into Israel, attacking the kibbutzes, killing people, raping people, kidnapping people, and then running all back into Gaza with their people they've kidnapped, and then that's it? They stopped planning. To say, and then we come back into Gaza, and we'll celebrate. Whoopee, whoopee. Okay, we're done planning. No, that doesn't sound like a scenario to me. Surely, of the various people, I don't know how many of them planned this, but it had to be rather a bunch of people planning this. Surely somebody said, ah, and then what? That's a big question. And then what? You've just committed this act of war, war crimes, and you know how Israel behaves. You know how Netanyahu behaves. You know that Netanyahu is in trouble in Israel. And he's indicted for things, and people are demonstrating in the streets to have him removed, partly because of the criminal accusations, and partly because he and the far right wing of the Israeli parliament are trying to make it so that they can just knock over the Israeli Supreme Court if the Israeli Supreme Court disagrees with anything that they've done. So given all of this, can any sane person say that the Hamas planners did not know that Israel was going to go completely berserk about this, was going to unite, and that Netanyahu was going to get his way with what to do, which we know is to bomb the hell out of Gaza and, you know, say, well, I'm going to kill the Hamas guys and just bomb everything he can in there. You know, so really, I see a lot of people, especially a lot of the leftoids. That's my name for people who are, or at least claim to be left-leaning, but who behave stupidly. And I see them saying, oh, yes, all of this is happening. Oh, it's all Israel's fault. And, you know, and they have this river to the sea chant, which, hey, that kind of sounds like you want to wipe out everybody. You want to be with Hamas, I suppose. And we also know that people went to that rally that was called by the former head of Hamas. How stupid do you have to be to go to that? And a lot of people went to that. And I'm seeing all sorts of excuses for why Hamas is just great and wonderful. I say, oh, the Palestinian people are suffering. Yeah, they are. That was part of Hamas's plan. Hamas has everything set up in people's backyards, in people's basements, in the apartment next door to somebody, and stuff like that. So how do you get to your enemy? You got to blow them up some way. Well, the way you do it is you drop a bomb on him. And if he is hiding amid ordinary apartment buildings, you're going to blow up a whole lot of ordinary apartment buildings with ordinary people in them, and that's going to be terrible. And so all of this is stuff that Hamas has in fact planned. They knew that Israel was going to unite and lash out at them, because they didn't just go shoot some people. They went in and they murdered, what is it now, 1,400 people. They kidnapped 250 people. They did a lot of bad things. There were rapes and desecration of the dead, which I think both of those religions have a big thing against, but I don't know. I guess they make it up as they go along. And they certainly have taken the pressure off Netanyahu for the crimes he'd committed. And now he's pretty much cemented in for at least a while. Some are talking about the intel failure that allowed the October 7th invasion and mass rape, murder, and kidnapping to happen. And they're putting that on Netanyahu, which they should. But right now, everybody's still in a war frenzy. And they're raging. This is a rage. And it's a national rage. And that sort of thing doesn't just happen for one day and go away. It's got a lot of inertia to it. So, you know, and let's say this. There is absolutely some anti-Semitism involved in this. I mean, you can see some of this where some people are outright referring to the Jews. And some people are doing things like attacking Jews. And, of course, some Jews also attacked somebody they perceived as Palestinian in Bay Ridge. And then you've got students who are forcing the lockdown of some Jewish students at Cooper Union. That's not a good thing to do. Well, it is showing to some degree what you think. You have anti-Semitic thoughts. Those aren't good. Anti-Palestinian thoughts aren't good either. Going to the crux of this, Israel is now on the offensive, and if they have a goal of fighting their real enemy, Hamas, of course they're going to bomb where Hamas is. You know, we had this, both sides have done some pretty bad things, and we had this in World War II. Dresden and Hamburg come to mind, and you know and London and Coventry come to mind. So one side does it, the other side does it back to them, and it was all predictable, and it's all done on purpose. And so, you know, I don't like either side. I've never liked either side in this whole thing. This current thing is another escalation of it all. I guess that eventually things will go back to abnormal over there, but it's all very bad. And I, for one, however, am not going to be one of these one-sided people who says, oh, the poor Palestinians. It would be good if the Palestinians would get rid of their government, which is Hamas. Hamas took over the Gaza Strip years ago. And their stated desire is to wipe out the state of Israel. So, you know, if you're going to live with them, you got to expect something like this when they do something like October 7th. And I'm sure a lot of people on BAI already very much disagree with me. And that's life. We get to disagree with each other. But really, I think some analysis of what's really going on is a good idea, not just this knee-jerk stuff that I'm seeing a lot of.
I pretty much agree with you, Arpal. The thing that I find heartening is that the peace groups on both sides, the Israeli and the Palestinian side, are still trying to work together, both there and here. And that is heartening when they call for people to come out and try and find another way. Think of all the people that are being hurt first, especially the kids. All the kids. That is like one small ray of hope in this horrible, horrible situation.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. And after we've talked a bit about some of the real horrible stuff that's going on in the world these days, now we'll hear from Pickles of the North about something that is not horrible.
That's the strangest feeling. Ooh, baby, I'm a king-sized world. When I take you strolling, baby, oh, and you're walking late at night, but you're just a little nervous, walking with me in the world of moonlight.
Is right, Arpal. It is the holiday of Halloween that is coming up very shortly. I'm going to read a little excerpt from High Days and Holidays by Eleanor Graham. It's a little book from 1932, and it's a British book. So, and this little section is about the holiday Halloween, October 31st, Nutcrack Night. Everybody knows that Halloween, of all the nights in the year, is the spookiest. All the witches, hobgoblins, ghosts, unquiet spirits, and every kind of gnome and sprite and mischievous imp are abroad. That is why it is a good night to tell fortunes and to try to look into the future. If you are nervous of being bewitched or ill-wished, then wear something red. Or better still, a branch of the rowan tree with its red berries on. A rowan tree is an ash tree. It has very red berries. Red is a dangerous color for these supernatural beings, and they fight shy of it and shun those who wear it. Ill fortune caused by witches and evil spirits was considered a real danger that might happen to anyone not so long ago. Farmers and those who had easily damageable property did all they could to guard against any such misfortune. So, on Halloween, bonfires were lit, and from them bunches of straw, smoldering red, were carried by farmers round their corn stacks and barns. In Lancashire, a candle lighted from the bonfires was carried about the fells, and fells is like the moors, carried about the fells to clear off the evil spirits. In Scotland, the red of a fiery stick used to be waved in the air to affright them wherever they might be. All over the country, after the bonfires were lit, brands from them were carried into the houses and a new fire lit in each to safeguard the home. In North Wales, families used to combine to make a bonfire between them in some conspicuous place near the house. Ooh, I hope it wasn't too near. Every one of the families threw into the ashes a white stone marked in some distinguishing way. Next morning, these stones were searched for anxiously, for if any were missing, the owners would die in the coming year, or so it was believed.
Oh, my!
What a fun ritual. It used to be thought that if you were brave enough to go and look through the windows of a church at midnight on Halloween, you would see an unearthly light there and the devil himself in the pulpit reading out the names of those who would be his before the next Halloween. Games for Halloween. Number one, apples are suspended from a beam by strings. Each person has to try to catch one, using the mouth only. The hand should really be tied behind securely. I don't think I've ever done that in my life.
Bobbing for apples?
That's not bobbing. That's not bobbing. Nope, bobbing comes next.
Okay.
I don't know what to call this. Apple on a string?
I guess. I've never done that at all.
Well, here comes the thing you might have done. Two, bob apple. A number of apples are floated in a tub, and the assembled company must extract as many as they can, again, with the mouth only. Of course, the apples with stalks are managed fairly easily and are picked up first. The real scramble begins when the last few stalkless ones are all that are left, and the competitors must either be prepared to get very wet going after their prey, or be very clever in sucking up the apples and so catching them. Oh, that sounds like almost like a filthy passage there.
Suck up my apples.
Jeez. Oh, dear. Three, snapdragon. This is one of the jolliest things to do in 1932, I guess. A broad, shallow basin is needed, and in that are put some raisins. Brandy is poured over and lit. The lights in the room should be out, so there is only the firelight and the strange flickering flame of the burning spirit. The company must snatch a brand from the burning, a raisin that is, and how they do it and what is their reward give fair means for character judging and forecasting. A timid person may refuse to try at all. One who is timid but persevering may try and fail. The rash fly right in and pull out their plums regardless of the flames. The cautious may get their prize, but are likely to get burned in the effort. Oh, doesn't that sound like fun?
Oh, God. I remember, I guess my most elaborate Halloween was when I was a kid. I was probably about 9, maybe at the outside 10. And my Protestant relatives... We were Roman Catholic. I was Roman Catholic. My mother was Roman Catholic. My father was Protestant, nominally, because the other people I'm going to talk about were his his mother and his sisters and his brother, except his brother became Catholic. And anyway, my father never went to church. He just did not. On the other hand, he would staunchly believe in dogs spelled backwards. And, oh boy, my father would be a sort of an Archie Bunker to some degree. Anyway, so my Protestant relatives, they had a church, and I think it eventually became a ballroom over on, Prospect Heights in Brooklyn, I think it's called. It's by where Bishop Ford is. It's across the highway from Bishop Ford and down a ways. I don't remember the exact place, but there have been a series of ballrooms or celebration and event spaces in there, and it was their church, but it was set up with a stage. They had a stage, and they didn't change it at all, and it was an Episcopalian church, and so we were in there, and they had their big celebration, and I had a costume. I had a skeleton costume, and other kids were brought in there. Not a lot of kids. And then you had some adults in there, some of whom had various issues. I remember there was a thing of, if you broke a balloon, you had to pay a nickel. That was a penalty. It was a joke thing. It was a penalty. And this one woman, when somebody would break a balloon, would just go nuts. No, you're breaking the balloon. It was like, you know, she had a big investment in these balloons lasting forever. And it was terrible if anybody broke a balloon, so that was a little bit nuts. And we had, we were all in there, and it was very elaborate. We did have bobbing for apples. Nobody could do it. They pulled the stems out, so it was just this, you couldn't get a hold of the thing. It was, and we had these little mouths, there were kids. I suppose some enormous mouthed adult could do this. We never thought of putting pushing down an apple and then starting to suck on it and sucking in the water and using suction to get the thing out of the water, because, you know, the water we considered to be kind of gross. And even though it probably wasn't, it was just, you know, they filled it with tap water. But, you know, nobody did that, and nobody could get any. So eventually the kids said, bleep this, reached in, grabbed the apple, ate it, and hell with it. And we had other little things going on there. But it was the most elaborate Halloween I ever had. And I of course, remember it. It has to have been, it's well over 60 years ago. But I remember that night. And it was very interesting. And I was, and they had some thing of where people would get sort of mock married at it. I don't know what that was about. And so husbands would marry their wives and buy a ring for 10 cents. And, you know, they were fundraising in a really chintzy way. And so I ended up marrying someone who was perhaps a first cousin or a first cousin once removed. I don't know. She was the niece of my uncle, who was not a blood relative. And so I married her. And her brother also married her. So nobody thought to give us any instruction on what that might be called. But, you know, we were little kids and we didn't. He was 11. I was 9. She was 8 or 9. And other kids were similar ages, you know, and younger than we were. So that I remember that very well, that was a very formal Halloween. Otherwise, you would sometimes just go out and go around to people's apartments and say, anything for Halloween? You didn't say trick or treat, because somebody would say, okay, show me your trick. And what are you going to do? I mean, if you start doing anything, they'll be able to punch the hell out of you because you're a little kid. They're going to break bones. And also, of course, there was the infamous sock with flour in it. And you would take a big sidewalk chalk and rub that on the outside so that it had a colorful, left a colorful bit of chalk on there and flour. And, yeah, we would go around slugging each other with those things.
They have a long, long tradition of kids doing that.
Yeah. Oh, it was really something. Anyway, and you would ask strangers on the street on 7th Avenue. We would ask people going when we were really little, oh, anything for Halloween? And they would usually tell you to get lost. And so that was it. But I remember especially that one where we were in the Episcopalian church getting stuff happening. I think the adults were mostly getting drunk. So there was that too.
In the church hall? My goodness.
I guess. I mean, this is what my relatives did.
Well, as I've said before, we since it was my second youngest brother's birthday, we would have a party and be hopped up on cake and ice cream and then go out for trick-or-treats and candy. And, of course, it being in Quebec, you would have a lot of French kids doing this, and that was not part of their tradition. But, hey, you see all these English kids getting candy, so English-speaking kids.
English and Irish.
And so that would be the, like, if they didn't know how to speak English, the three words they knew was trick or treat. And so it was like, candy bedlam.
And, of course, the actual ancient stuff, which you and I both have in our ancient ancestry, was Samhain, as it's called, which is not spelled that way, but it's called Samhain, which was, New Year's Eve
in
the Celtic calendar?
Yes.
Yeah, in that culture, it was New Year's Eve, and it had all sorts of stuff going on with it. So, yeah, the Irish kids, at least, who also gave this to the English kids, had a very long tradition of their ancestors doing something on October 31st. And now everybody does it. Of course, everyone's been talking about the clown car in Congress where the Republicans cannot figure out how to get a Speaker of the House. And, of course, they got McCarthy after, 15 votes or something in January? And he had to sell his soul to the farthest right idiots in the House of Representatives. And then they kicked him out because he compromised. Oh, boy. We've been off, of course, for a week here. There was a big fundraiser last week in this time slot. And this past week, stuff really came to a head. House Republicans, in general, the ones who are not absolute right-wing freaks, have really shown themselves to be gutless. They had yet some more votes here, and this week they plugged in this Louisiana Republican, Mike Johnson, as Speaker of the House. He is a right-wing creep. He got 220 of the 221 Republican House members to vote for him. I think that the one of them who didn't vote for him was just not in attendance. I know the Democrats got 209 votes for Hakeem Jeffries because those were all the Democrats who were on the House floor at that moment. Of course, we've seen all of the stuff that's been going on, and they had rejected the far right-wing dope Jim Jordan. But when they put up Minnesota Republican Tom Emmer, who wasn't a far right-wing idiot, Donnie Bonespur Trump got involved, and he railed against Emmer, called him a rhino, a Republican in name only, and Trump said on his pathetic social media site, quote, "Go with the leading candidate, Mike Johnson, and get it done fast," unquote. Oh, boy. And this was enough to scare the Republicans, who are not the insanely right-wing ilk who get a lot of publicity in the House, and they voted for Johnson. And the day before all this vote happened, that guy Emmer had, of course, dropped out of the race within hours of Trump's hissy fit. He didn't even try for a vote. And then this Johnson creep got Trump's approval and got in with a single vote, as opposed to the 15 McCarthy had had to go through. Even the New York area Republicans in the House voted for Johnson. Oh, boy. This Johnson guy is a serious anti-gay or anti LGBT plus infinity activist. He spoke in favor of Florida's Don't Say Gay law, which restricts discussion of gender identity and sexual orientation in classrooms. A few years ago, he wrote an op-ed piece in a Louisiana newspaper complaining about the Supreme Court striking down the Texas law criminalizing sodomy between consenting adults. He agreed with Associate Justice Antonin Scalia, I spit on his grave, who wrote a nasty opposition to the majority's decision to strike down such laws. And a Johnson's right-wing advocacy group filed an amicus brief in support of the Texas law. He's also spoken and written against same-gender marriages, and he is just in general a thorough right-wing anti-LGBT plus infinity bigot. He supports a national ban on all abortions. That would be not just a state doing it, but the federal government banning abortions in all the United States. And he introduced such a bill in the House that would have imposed a ban on all abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. It would have been a federal ban. In other words, nowhere in America could anybody get an abortion. Holy hell. And I bet with the right wing these days, they'd probably cut it down from 20 to like 6 or maybe just 0. He also celebrated the overturning of the Roe v. Wade decision. So, yeah, this is a bad guy in several different ways. Johnson voted to refuse to certify President Biden's win in the 2020 election. He was one of those. He signed on to a lawsuit that claimed President Biden's victories in a number of battleground states were invalid. They were those infamous lawsuits that were tossed out by a lot of judges, like 60-odd lawsuits that just got thrown in the garbage because they were trash. Given that McCarthy got removed for compromising with Democrats to get the government funded for a short while, it's going to be interesting to see what this Johnson creep does next month when the government needs authorization to keep going again. And will some Republicans who are in battleground states quiver over this? They've just shown that they have no backbones. On the other hand, there is this thought in the back of some of their minds, and you have to remember what these people are like. They're all always thinking of the next election. They like being in Congress. Makes them feel big. And they want to stay there. And there's always another election coming up in 2 years or less. So they're also going to have, in at least the back of their minds, front, some of them very close to the front of their minds, if we don't fund the government, what's going to happen when it comes time to vote? Now, some places where, like this Johnson guy is from, he whomped his opposition by 2-1. It's a very red district. So he'll have no problem no matter what he does. But then you've got those 6 seats that the Republicans took from the Democrats in New York in 2020. And what's going to happen there? Some of those people just barely squeaked in. I wonder how it's going to work if the Democrats are able to say, hey, you know all that bad stuff that happened and is still happening because we couldn't fund the government? It's their fault. I won't do that. I won't have some stupid, stick up my rectum about saying, oh, no, we can't spend this money. It's stupid. It's a stupid thing that some Republicans came up with years ago as a way for them to do stupid things. When they did it originally, I think they didn't envision the monster they were making. But they made it, and it's there. So it's possible some could defect. On the other hand, Trump is going to tell them not to fund the government, because then he'll use that and say, see, it's Biden's fault that all this is happening. The same way that these same right-wing Republicans vote against measures in Congress and then go home and say, look, we passed this. So vote for me because we passed this. You voted against it. You spoke against it. You lying piece of crap. And they do this. So who knows what's going to happen, but if they shut down the government, this is not a good time to shut down the government. We also have the possibility that they are going to refuse to fund sending stuff to Ukraine. I suspect there's a way that Biden can get around some of that. I think, you know, he could lend lease, I think. Okay, we're going to lend Ukraine some of this stuff. I don't know that you have to have Congress pass something. I mean, Congress won't pass anything. And they can't. I don't think they could stop him. And so maybe he'll be able to fund, you know, send stuff there for a while longer. But it's going to be really terrible if Ukraine ends up getting overrun because of these right-wing creeps. And we know that Putin owns Trump. Trump is essentially a Russian agent. And there are some other people I could name who seem like they're Russian agents too, but I'm not allowed to do that. But yeah, this is going to be really very bad stuff here. Ah, Jesus. I mean, it could be really, really terrible. I mean, think of the government not being funded for months at a time. It's going to happen around Thanksgiving, too. And all those government workers have to be furloughed. The military will not be getting paid. A lot of things will not happen. And, you know, and everybody will be saying, okay, this is our new politics. And the Democrats are, of course, going to push their view on this. And the Republicans are going to be saying, see, we've made it so we're not spending money. Meanwhile, people aren't getting, what, food stamps or something? Social Security is protected in this stuff, I've heard. I don't know if they can stop Social Security with this. But there are a lot of things that will be stopped if they do it. And how long are they prepared to wreck the country for?
Apparently, this guy is a big fan of defunding both Social Security and Medicare.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes. Medicare, Medicaid, he's after all of that stuff. I don't know that they're going to be able to do that because I think a lot of the Republicans know the elderly vote is what keeps them in. Not my elderly vote, I can tell you that, but I guess you can guess that already. But and Pickles of the North can't vote because she's a foreigner. So, yeah, they're not going to get our vote. But a lot of their voters are older people, and a lot of them are not rich. And they're sitting there saying, I need the Social Security. What the hell do you mean I'm not getting it anymore? So, yeah, that will be. And what they'll do is they'll say, well, we'll just have churches fund it so that you have to be in with some superstitious group to get something. And you end up being beholden to some superstitious group who says, oh, yeah, dog spelled backwards is on our side. And, you know, if they decide you're like an atheist, they'll say, well, you're with the devil, so you're not going to get anything. Terrible way to do things. Well, if the Republicans want a social revolution, they're liable to get one. And in our People Gotta Be More Careful department, we have this from the December issue of Scientific American in the Quick Hits section by Timmy Broderick. Antarctica, quote, research stations in Antarctica have polluted surrounding ocean areas with heavy metals, fuel components, and carcinogenic compounds, a new study shows. The contamination has accumulated because of poor waste management over the decades, unquote. So, you know, there's a scientific research being done in Antarctica on all sorts of things. I know there's a lot of astronomy stuff that's done there because it's not as subject to nearby TV stations and things. Plus, they get to survey the southern half of the sky. And because of the ice there, they can sink detectors into the ice and detect neutrinos. So there's a lot of scientific work done there, but oh my, they didn't pay attention. You know, it shows that you can be doing all this good work and, you know, you left out the ecologists here, or at least you left out considering what you're doing to Antarctica. And this is terrible stuff. And there are also, of course, people studying the animals and the geology and the climate stuff there. Oh, well, this is unfortunate that something like this is happening. Very fast, I want to note, I haven't been talking about stuff from 50 years ago for a while. That's because there's a gap in my notes. I had about a year and a half gap in the notes I was making 50 years ago. And in August, I think, of 73, I resumed writing things down. And, you know, we're talking about politics and elections. Well, 50 years ago, this month, in late October 1973, I was running for vice president of the Gay Activists Alliance. Yeah, this was after a guy named Bruce Veller, who'd been president of the Gay Activists Alliance, quit and took a lot of stuff with him that he shouldn't have taken and brought it over to his brand new group called the National Gay Task Force. And, you know, he took stuff that, oh, we're going to be national. So he took all of our sodomy and solicitation stuff. We've been fighting the New York state sodomy laws. He took all of that over to NGTF, and oh, it was terrible. And he put the vice president in charge of watching out to make sure that GAA didn't get robbed in this. Well, the vice president of GAA turned out to be his pal, and when he was done looting GAA, she left and went over to the National Gay Task Force. So yes, the National Gay, Lesbian, Everybody Else Task Force, as it exists today, has a rather shoddy beginning. Anyway, 50 years ago, I ran for vice president of Gay Activists Alliance, and I lost. Oh! It's the WBAI back of the book pitching train pulling into the Stationem. All aboard, goddammit. Okay, this is WBAI New York, of course, and what we do here is we are non-commercial listener-sponsored radio. We get on the air and we beg you for money. We don't have regular commercials. We have us asking you to fund this radio station. Only you can keep these radio programs on the air. And I know some of you have. Some of you have pledged. And in fact, I will say that David and Seth and Tony and Bettina have pledged to back of the book to help keep it going. How do you do that? How do you keep back of the book on WBAI and keep WBAI on the air? What you do is you go to your phone and you dial 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. A BAI buddy is the name of our sustaining membership here at WBAI. And what you do is you tell them you want to become a BAI buddy, and you will give them your credit card or debit card number, and you will then tell them how much you want to donate on a monthly basis. It can be as little as $10 a month. You could probably do $10 a month. At least some of you can. $10, $15, $20 a month. Something in there is probably what most of our listeners can do. Some could do more, and I wish they would. And that will help a lot. We don't have a lot of BAI buddies. I think we have 3 BAI buddies, and that's the end of that. But you could become our 4th or 5th or 6th BAI buddy. You can also make a one-time donation. You can do that by calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. These late-night radio programs are different from what you hear elsewhere, even on the overnights on other stations. They are just different. I mean, there's a freedom in these overnight programs from midnight to 6 a.m. that doesn't exist in the daytime. God, I've always not liked being at BAI, being in the station at daytime. Of course, we haven't had to worry about that for the past 3.5 years. So, yes, we're asking you to please help us out. Now, we do little science things. We do more science things sometimes. And we talk about the politics. We just can't get away from it. And, oh, geez, like Santos and his stupid stuff. He's indicted. They're finally trying to get rid of him. But they didn't try to get rid of him before they had the speaker election, because they needed every single vote. And the anti-gay bigot, who is now speaker, wanted him in there because he's a vote. Even though he's a gay voter, he had a vote. And now they've said, okay, now we got the speaker in. We want to fire this guy. We want to send him out of here. And, oh, well, so it was all, you know, not that he doesn't deserve it. 1-212-209-2950. We can talk about politics. We talk about various different things. Sometimes Pickles of the North reviews a book, and we talk about ancient things we've done in our lives. I just did a 50 years ago thing. We talk about things that you don't hear elsewhere. You don't hear too much about Antarctica getting polluted. You don't hear too much long things about black holes. You don't hear too much about the science behind why it's very bad that part of East Antarctica slips off. And the reason is, of course, because it gets the ice shelf gets dug into the dirt. And if something happens, and that stops it, like you would dig anything into dirt. But if the dirt on the floor of the sea moves around a little bit and the ice melts a bit, it's not stuck anymore. So the ice shelf starts slipping off. And the ice shelf slipping off Antarctica is going to raise sea levels. Same thing is happening with Greenland. Greenland is just melting. You can go there and look at the I've seen pictures on TV of just this deluge of water squirting out of the end of a glacier. It's not even sending off icebergs. It's just fresh water running off it like crazy, like a gigantic pipe is there. That pretty much is it. And it's just squirting out, you know, probably hundreds of gallons a minute or something. Anyway, we talk about these things. You don't hear too much about this generally on the radio, although on BAI you do hear about some of this. And that's also it. Supporting the overnights is important. Supporting all of WBAI is important. And I got to say again, there are people who are proposing that what we need to do is to have the overnights rented out to other interests, maybe not even radio stations, maybe just some groups that would want to come on and talk for 6 hours, and we would be renting out the overnights from midnight to 6 a.m. 7 days a week. And that would make money for WBAI, and it would make a difference because we have another deficit budget, and the rest of Pacifica has deficit budgets. We need to raise money. The only way we can do it is for you to go to your phone and dial 1-212-209-2950 and become a BAI buddy, or to make a one-time donation. Again, 1-212-209-2950. Thank you if you're pledging. That's been it for Back of the Book. Coming up next is
Everything Old is New Again with David Kenny.
And so you should listen to that. And we're scheduled to be back here next week. Enjoy things. Don't eat too much Halloween candy. And above all, remember what that embracing the giddy frivolity of this weekend Dormouse said.
New York isn't like any other place, and WBAI isn't like any other radio station. For more than 60 years, WBAI has been your go-to for independent, non-commercial, free speech programming. Join the WBAI family as a BAI buddy in the name of your favorite show today. It's easy. Just go to give2wbai.org, or text WBAI to 41444, or call 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. When you become a BAI buddy, you show your support for great programs on politics, news, the arts, music, and culture. Supporting WBAI means supporting programming that lets you hear from your elected officials with hosts who hold them accountable. Go to give2wbai.org or call 516-620-3602 now. Don't wait. You know these times are too important. Please give as generously as you can. It's really easy to make a recurring monthly donation. It only takes a minute. Just go to WBAI.org, click ways to donate, and say you want to be a BAI buddy in the name of your favorite program. WBAI has spoken up for New Yorkers for more than 60 years. Now, it's time to speak up for WBAI. Go to give2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org, or text WBAI to 41444. Give to WBAI today. Be heard.
Get ready for the African Diaspora International Film Festival 2023, November 24 to December 10. Experience award-winning films, lively Q&As, and catered receptions. Come discover MK, Mandela's Secret Army, and historical drama Hope of Escape. For more information, visit NYADIFF or call 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black life matters. November 24 to December 10. Don't miss it.
Hey, Maya, guess what? Kylie Jenner's new lip kit is out.
Mercedes, are you really going to spend your money on that garbage?
It's not garbage. She finally released the color I've been looking for, ginger.
Mercedes, you can do so much more.
Like what?
You can donate it to WBAI and become a BAI buddy.
What's a BAI buddy?
A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a monthly donation to WBAI. Once you join, you'll receive a BAI buddy card and a free tote bag. The BAI buddy card allows you to become eligible for on-air giveaways and receive discounts at local shops, museums, and venues. And that's not even the best part. You can get all of this and more by donating as little as $10 a month.
That sounds amazing. I want to become a BAI buddy. How can I join?
You can sign up at WBAI.org.
WBAI.org? Got it. Thanks. And you're right, I can do a lot more at WBAI than with Kylie Jenner.
It's all about supporting a medium that keeps it 100.
New York City never slows down. It can be tough to keep up with everything. That's where WBAI City Watch comes in, Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock. I'm your host, Jeff Simmons.
And I'm Carlos Benchaca. And each week on City Watch, we try to make sense of it all, bringing on our policymakers, advocates, experts, and authors to understand the stories behind the headline. So grab your café con leche, turn your dial to 99.5 FM WBAI, or stream us on WBAI.org. Levántate. Wake up with us on Sunday mornings with me and Jeff Simmons and get your news on.
WBAI, WBAI.